All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck sticks? What the fuck Minster Fullers? There's a classic. What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. It's a show that you listen to on your device or your computer, and you can do it through earbuds or headphones, or you can listen to it right out of the speakers on whatever you know what it is. I'm back from Europe. Been back a couple days now. By the way, Drew Carey is on the show, and it was a whopper. Yeah, it's a big talk, and I had no idea about anything about that guy, and he just wanted to come by, and it was great. I'd met him once before, but you just never know. I don't know about you, but I never know, and it was great. We had some laughs. I learned some stuff. There was some inspiration to it. It was a great talk, and I was happy to meet him, and I'm happy to be back home. What have I missed since I last talked to you? Michelle Wolf, I think, did a great job sticking it to the man. Sticking it to the man. Yeah, I don't know what the backlash. There's no backlash. It's just a bunch of press idiots threw her under the bus out of fear for their own goddamn connections, among other things. And then there, of course, was the predictable right, who are a bunch of self-proclaimed victims. For people that complain about a welfare state or treating people who are the less fortunate with any respect whatsoever, boy, do they do the fucking victim thing. Woo-hoo-hoo! Yeah, real sad sacks, a lot of them. Just real thin-skinned. Ugh, what a bunch of cowards. Cowards and babies. Armies of them. Armies of cowards and babies. So back from Europe, look, I travel a lot, and I was just on the road for 2 weeks, and I was with Sarah the painter, a lovely time, but just between us, I mean, how do you shit on the road? I mean, this is unnecessary maybe, but does your body naturally hold back what's in it when you're not at home? I mean, I find this even when I travel myself, but I guess what I'm trying to tell you is a lot happened when I got back after 2.5 weeks or however long was I gone. I don't know if it's a normal consequence of traveling or maybe that I'm inherently colon shy. I don't know. I don't know what the story is. I don't know if this is a common situation, but it happened to me. I guess can I get a witness? I think is where I'm at with this. Am I unusual? I know I am. I know, and I know this is not breakfast talk or table talk or even necessarily podcast talk, not this podcast, but it was on my mind. I never really noticed it as much as I did this time. And then again, I was traveling with Sarah. I wanted to keep something mysterious. You know, you cross a line with intimacy where there's just, there's no mystery anymore, and it's more comfortable, but it's all out there. You know what I mean? So maybe my insides are saying, you know what, let's keep this a secret for a little while longer, all of this. Let's not go all out. But I did have a lovely time. I'm happy to be home. I think it sounds pretty good right now, and I think this garage is really starting to work out. I've been having longer conversations in here. It feels like some of the more consistently than I was at the old place. And this kid Julian, who I had hand build me some sound platforms. I had him just build me some stuff, and he built it. It's got a nice homemade feel to it, but they look good, and they sort of encase me in these platforms that he built, and I think they're working, and I kind of like it in here. I don't know. I'm glad I do. I didn't know if it was going to happen, but I'm glad I do. So I get home, immediately start worrying. The jet lag's been kind of fucked up, but then I woke up today, and LaFonda is having a hard time peeing. Then I'm finding puddles of, you know, bloody pee everywhere, and there's blood here and there. I don't know how long it's going on for. I was away for 2 weeks. I asked a guy who was staying at my house if he noticed anything. She's been a little crying a bit, but it was just all, I don't know. Today she waited to get this ill till this morning, and I took her in and, you know, put her through that. She's a 14-year-old cat. She's a little cat. And, you know, I got to get her in the box, which is a fucking nightmare. And hopefully it's just a bladder infection. That's where we're at. But the drama of getting a cat to a vet me stressing out, me knowing they're getting old. You know, they've been so happy over here at the new house, you know, and then the vet said something to Sarah about how when you leave, it's like they go through it like a horrendous grief. You know, it's very stressful, and I was away for 2 weeks, and you know, I can't. You know, you can't just build your life completely around the cats. You know, you got to go out and live, and I learned that a long time ago. But it's, you know, it's sort of sad, and I hope she's going to be okay. Thank you. I'm not asking for hopes and prayers or anything, but she seems all right. She's a little loopy, but I'll let you know. That's what happened today. It was stressful, but I'm okay. I'm back in town. Got some new sound panels going. Everything's all right. Watched a rat lumber across my front yard yesterday. I just saw this little guy, looked like a torpedo going through the grass in my front yard. I was probably about 30, 40 feet away, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I run over, and I just watch this rat kind of move through the yard and look for a place to go into the house, around the side, in the walls. Didn't look like he lived there. It looked like he was on his, I don't know, he didn't seem well. It was daytime, and I followed him, and he looked at me. I looked at him. He didn't seem that there was an urgency there, and that usually means that's a sick fucking rat. A rat with no urgency is a sick rat. There's a quotable. Here's another one that I wrote down for some reason. There's too much to watch. You know when people say that about TV and what's on streaming and everything? Too much to watch, I think, is today's version of there's nothing on. Think about it. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. Drew Carey is a nice guy. He's a funny guy. He's a guy that's got a hell of a job in show business. He's the host of The Price is Right, which is still on weekdays at 11 a.m. on CBS forever, and for it will be forever. And we get up to that point. We talk about how he got that gig. But I was completely surprised with this chat, and I really enjoyed it, and I think he did too. We had some laughs. He's a laugher. This is me and Drew Carey. I'm trying to remember the first time I met you, and I think it was an Alex Bennett show, a remote Alex Bennett show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in San Francisco.
Oh, so at a bar.
Yeah, at a bar or something.
I remember it was really crowded. It was like dark wood place with booths.
Right, yeah.
And it was like a place where we put peanuts on the floor.
But that weird thing when you do the radio in the morning at the place, everyone's eating like full dinners. You know, like there's always like this weird buffet of food. It's like 7 in the morning and people are eating like, you know, stew and chili and nachos and burgers.
It was what the place had to offer.
Right. And for some reason, when you're doing morning radio, you're sort of like, this is the way we live.
I remember.
We're eating dinner now.
I remember people were drinking beer.
Sure. Of course.
At 10 in the morning.
Right, because you were probably commenting on it. I'm like, really? Is this happening?
That was weird.
Yeah. But like, I mean, Christ, you're like, that was a long time ago. That must have been like 91, 92 probably.
Is he still on the air?
I think he's on Sirius.
Oh, okay.
Oh, another thing I have to tell you is I got to apologize for something that you probably don't remember.
If you have to go through that step, are you in the program?
I am, but it's not that big a deal. It's not one of those. I'm in the program, but this is not.
Do you want to do the seventh step where you do like what your resentment towards me and your role
step,
in it?
It's a ninth step, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's not one of those, but like years ago, I'm pretty sure you're at the Montreal Comedy Festival.
Okay.
And, you know, you were there and you had a room. And I was like, I believe it was Rich Jenny that was, you know, that was down in the bar and I was talking to him and he was talking to this girl who was with a dude. And then he, you know, I don't know how it happened or what transpired. I'm pretty sure it was Jenny. That's possible, right? You guys were friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but whatever the fact is that you had people up in your room. And it was like a very small gathering, you know, like, and I brought these two kids up, like this girl and this dude, you know, who you didn't know. And I knew in my mind, I'm like, I don't know how many people are going to be up there. Why am I? And when I brought them up there, it was clear that it was like just you and Rich and maybe Rick Messina or somebody.
Oh.
And it was like, and I brought these strangers into your room. And it was one of those moments where you're just looking at me like, what's happening? Why are these people here?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. It was my fault.
No, I should have been more welcoming if that was the case.
No, but it wasn't that big a party. And I know what that's like to have just sort of like, who brought these? Why are these fans just in here looking for drugs?
Were they not Were they not that cool? Is that what it was?
Well, yeah, they were just clearly just, you know, civilians.
Oh, okay. You know? I mean, if sometimes you bring civilians to place and if they're super cool, then you're
it's
glad
okay.
they were brought.
Right.
Like,
no.
Oh, so I'm so glad you brought these fun people. But if you brought a couple of duds.
Well, they were just there. And it was just.
Apology accepted.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I apologize for bringing the duds.
Anybody who's listening, it's totally fine, I think, to bring like an uninvited. I mean, not all of, but for a casual thing.
Yeah.
You know, where there's only so many seats. Sure, bring an uninvited thing, but just better make sure they're cool. Like if I showed up right now and I said, hey, I know it's supposed to be you and me, but look, Mick Jagger was hanging out with me. You don't mind if he comes in, right? And you were like, hey, dude, it was just you and me. What are you bringing fucking Mick Jagger for? You know, who's the asshole then?
Yeah, me.
Yeah.
I'd be the asshole.
Not Mick Jagger.
No. So like, let's I want to talk about like the journey, man. I mean, you've been around a long time. Another story I need to ask real quick, because I heard a rumor about you and I want to know if it's true.
Sure.
Like the day before you were supposed to shoot the pilot of your television show, did you shave your head?
Oh, it wasn't the day before. It was, no, it wasn't the pilot. I had already been on the Drew Carey show. It was like I was about to start the second season.
Oh, okay.
Because I was still living in my apartment in Hollywood above. I lived a block up from the Rock and Roll Ralphs.
Oh, yeah.
I lived in an apartment there.
Like, where is that?
Fuller.
Western? And where is
right
where
by
is
Fuller and like on Sunset, Rock and Roll, by down the street from the Guitar Center.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So people call it the Rock and Roll Ralphs.
Yeah.
And the one side street is called Fuller. And I lived at Fuller and whatever the cross street was. There was a Fuller something apartment.
Yeah.
So I lived in Dice Clay's old apartment.
Really?
Yeah.
I lived in Dice Clay's old room in Crest Hill.
Well, I was glad that he had a third floor apartment at this place. I actually talked to him about it.
How did you get it
from
Dice?
Just coincidentally.
Oh, coincidence?
Yeah. Because they said when I was going to rent it out, they said, oh, Dice Clay used to live in this apartment. And I was like, okay. But I guess it was like a lucky place to live.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it worked out for Dice. It worked out for me.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of good times in that apartment. And but I was living there. And so I remember a picture that I had of me with my head shaved. And I don't know why. I just felt like shaving my head for, I don't know, and we'll see how it looked or something.
Yeah, right before you were supposed to shoot?
Well, it was like a month before.
Oh, okay.
It was like during the summer break.
Okay.
And I shaved my head and it just didn't grow back fast enough. So even though I had this short crew cut haircut.
It was too short.
It was still too short. And I had to get a wig made. Like I came back. I was like, man, my hair's not growing back. So they had a production. I had to like send me to a wig maker and make me a wig that was short.
A Drew Carey wig.
Yeah. It was just a real drag, man, the whole thing. But I was like, that wasn't the day before. I wouldn't have that. I'm not Britney Spears. I'm
okay. Yeah. That's what was going on in my mind. I'm like, what happened that day?
Paparazzi were chasing me. I couldn't take it.
You just lost it. That's the day Drew lost it.
Yeah.
But so Cleveland, I appreciate Cleveland a little more than I used to. And because you know there's like on that
me
one
too.
Block. Yeah, you do?
Yeah.
There's that one block that has some good restaurants on it.
Yeah, that's the one thing though. That's that bugs me about they do have like this one.
It's right across the street from Hilarity's.
Like to be fair.
Isn't it Hilarity's? Is that the club?
To be fair, it's like two or three blocks.
Okay. Right.
But it's like this one section.
Is it Third Street or Sixth Street or Third Street?
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, like the Greenhouse Tavern.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All around there. But then you walk onto Euclid after that, and there's like, you'll see a building like boarded up.
Yeah. There's the hotel I stayed at across the street in this old atrium building. And obviously.
Oh, you stayed there?
Yeah. The idea
the
was.
The atrium
like,
building's cool, isn't it?
It's a cool building, but whatever was supposed
one
to happen.
One of the original malls.
Didn't work out. Right. Yeah. The attempt to revitalize that mall didn't quite catch on.
It was never.
No, there was never an
anything.
Honest attempt. No.
Well, even when I was growing up, that was like the. It was always like that my whole life growing up. Yeah.
It's like four stores in there?
Because it's like, first of all, it's an old place.
It's a pretty old place.
It's cool.
Yeah.
But it's not. You have to be downtown to use it.
So, but when you were a kid.
No, you can't just like, hey, I'm going to this place. I'm going to park and go in and get out. Like,
right.
That's not the vibe of the place. You really have to go. That's the place where you go like to or from after work.
But were there stores in there when you were a kid?
There was the same kind of stores. There's like these small little like.
Oh, really?
Kind of yeah, I remember when I was in junior high, I was in Pirates and Penzance at my junior high school, and I had to get-
You did theater in high school?
Just that one.
That was-
Like, that was the choir's big-
Yeah, yeah.
That was his big thing,
uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
and I was in band.
Uh-huh.
So
what'd you play in band?
Trumpet.
Really? Oh, that's good. Marching band?
Yeah, marching band and stage band. And
so you wore the outfit, so you were a musical guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you still play the trumpet?
I can play a scale.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You let it go, though.
And even a chromatic. Yeah, I don't play anything. I really, when I was real little, I played accordion, and I keep threatening to learn accordion again.
It's a practical instrument. It'd be fun at parties.
It is if you're a comedian.
Sure.
Like, there's a lot of guitar. There's a few guitar acts out there.
There's a few left.
Yeah, there's a few left.
There were more back in the day, though, right?
Yeah, and I had no problem with them.
No?
No. I mean, do you remember comics used to complain about, this guy's a guitar act?
Guitar act, yeah.
But there's a couple of them that were really funny.
Yeah.
Bob Saget had a guitar act. The Smothers Brothers were a guitar act.
Sure.
And I idolized the Smothers Brothers.
Right. Well, one of them had a guitar. Right?
They both played.
Did they?
Oh, guitar and a bass.
Okay. But right. That's right.
Let's call them a guitar act.
Okay, fine.
So I don't care what you use as long as you're funny.
I think
Judy Tenuta used an accordion.
No, I think you're right. Emo Phillips used to come on stage with a trombone. He didn't play. He just would hold it for like the entire act.
One guy, I'm trying to remember this guy's name. I think about him all the time. I'm blanking on his name. I apologize,
dude. I hope I can remember.
Wherever you are,
go ahead.
I apologize. But he was really funny and a really good, and not just a guitar, but a really funny, like thoughtful one. And he had a thing in his act where he would have the audience do a sing-along, like a typical guitar guy sing-along.
Yeah.
Like, okay, 3-hour tour, have him do that. And then, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. And, oh, whatever, they'd have that. And then he would go to the crowd and go, okay, name your congressman. And everybody would just like, what? Yeah, and then they'd all laugh because, like, who knows? Yeah, as political as you think everybody, like, it's different now, I think. I think people are more political now than they were 4 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, because they're freaking out and they realize, like, maybe I should engage in
paying
this
a little
process.
More attention.
Yeah.
But, right before I did Price is Right, the reason I was on the Price is Right's radar is because there was a guy named Michael Davies who does Men in Blazers now. He's a TV producer guy. And now he does Men in Blazers, about a soccer thing, and plus other stuff. But he approached me. I did a project with him before and he used to be an executive at ABC. And he was doing a game show called The Power of 10 where...
Yeah.
You could win up to $10 million, and what you had to do is you had a they would do Rasmussen. They hired Rasmussen to do surveys about
the polling
things. Yeah, polling places.
Yeah.
They would do surveys about things, and you had to guess the percentage of the survey within a certain amount.
Yeah.
And if it was a wide margin, you'd win 1,000, and then the margins got narrower and narrower, and then if you got it within like 2% or 3 percentage points, you'd win $10 million. It was like that.
Yeah.
The percentages got harder and harder.
Right.
But it was things like, you know, what percentage of people think it's you have a right to own a gun?
Yeah.
What percentage of people don't wear underwear to
work? You got to guess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you would be like, some would be funny, you know, and some would be, you know, like, and some would be like serious political things that I would discuss with the contestant, and then they would try to answer. So when he pitched me the idea, I got a call from I was retired, and I didn't want to do anything unless it was fun. That was my thing. I said, if it's fun, I'll do it. If I think it's cool,
I'll do it. I remember that, Drew Carey.
But I don't want
to. I'm done.
But I don't need money.
Yeah.
So if you have a project, it's not about money. It's just about if I think it's goofy or enough to do, or fun enough to do. So my manager calls, says, oh, he wants to pitch you a show. It looks pretty good. You think you might like it? Okay. So I was friends with the George Voinovich and best friends with his daughter, Betsy.
Uh-huh.
And so I got to know the family. And George Voinovich was mayor of Cleveland, 2-term governor, 2-term senator, very popular politician. He was a senator at the time.
Yeah.
He was in L.A., California for something. And he was staying at the Beverly Hilton. And I was going to meet him for lunch. So while I'm waiting for him, I get the call about the show. And the sample question he gives me is, what percentage of people know the name of their governor?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know?
I would say 22%.
No. It's 11%. 14% if you included California because of Governor Schwarzenegger.
Huh.
And that's it.
Yeah.
You'd think more. And so I was like, wow, that's amazing that so many people don't even know the name of their governor.
That's true.
Because every once in a while you see a survey about people don't know the name of the president. And you're like, what, are you crazy? And then, you know, so then this guy shows up, Voinovich, who was a governor and is a senator. And I tell him that, and he's eating salad. And I go, what percentage of people know the name of their governor? And he goes, 10%. And I go, oh my God, it's like 11%.
Yeah.
How did you know that? And he goes, well, you know, and he goes, I go, isn't that amazing? You're in the paper every day and people don't know your name. And he didn't even look up. He goes, people don't read the paper. Just keep seating.
That's it.
Yeah.
They're just doing their own life.
And here's a guy who's been a politician like his whole life. And he's like, people don't read the paper.
No wonder it's such a cynical system and so fucking, you know, strangely dysfunctional. Because people don't give a shit. It seems like the only people that give a shit are the politicians who are looking to get something.
Well, I think more people are paying attention now, but even
yeah,
then,
hell like, yeah.
A lot of things go over. I mean, there's days where I just don't even want to look, man.
I know, dude.
Yeah. But I'm not as worried as everybody else, because I think everybody, I now have this.
You got Buddhist, an inside line? You got to.
No, I now have this like Buddhist philosophy about the Dhamma wheel, about how everything comes and goes and things come to the top and go to the bottom again.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's born and they die. And
you're
you know,
doing the Buddhist thing?
Yeah. Now, honestly, things are changing so fast. I was, you know, I'm listening to the news and there's like a woman host on NPR and like that used to be, where that would be a remarkable thing.
Yeah.
A female host of a radio show that was nationwide.
On
powerful.
NPR even?
Or even, you know.
Yeah.
40 years ago.
Sure.
Like in the 50s?
Yeah, a lot of things.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed very recently. We just don't really think about how recently things
yeah,
are.
Yeah, it changes fast and it changes slow, right?
Right.
So, like, if you think for a minute that 100 years from now, there's going to be people like Trump around in any kind of power, I think you're out of your mind. Like, this is like the last scream of a dying breed of thought.
Well, I hope so. I mean, like,
it is.
But the problem is like, I hope you're right.
It
I don't
totally
know.
Is.
I don't know what's going to happen in that 100 years that you're talking about to get to where there's no more Trump people around. But I will tell you this. It was less than 100 years ago where Europe was almost, you know, German.
Yeah. No. And it
and
takes
millions of people were killed.
Things don't happen overnight.
Right.
And then things change and they don't change. Like, you know, end of the Civil War, slavery's outlawed, but then it took like about 100 years for the Civil Rights Act to pass where
yeah.
we were like, okay, let's get serious about this.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then after that, still racism, like still dealing with it, but getting better and better and better.
Right.
Arguably.
Sure.
You know, not gone totally, but still getting better. And so it's going to be this. I have like a comet theory that I use all the time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So like a lot of change is like a comet.
Yeah.
The shape of a comet. So the people in front of the comet take all the heat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And get all the,
right,
get all
right,
the damage.
Sure.
And then it gets popular and the comet gets big.
Yeah.
And then there's that tail end of the comet of people that are just left behind and catching up and not quite there.
And they get all the benefits because they're like, by the time they get there,
not
like,
even the benefits. Like they don't even know what's going on in front.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Right.
So they're still like, oh, that's changed now because I don't feel like that. That's not me.
Yeah.
Around here, we still think.
Oh, yeah. So it takes them a while.
To catch up. Like people don't like to. Look how many people don't have computers, don't have.
I know. You make
proper
assumptions.
Internet access.
Right. That's right.
People think today like, wow, everybody's streaming things. They use the term everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
but there's still
all
a lot
of us are.
Yeah,
like you read an article. It's like all of us are. Nowadays,
right.
We all.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
There's like 20% or some really high percentage of people without decent internet access.
All they get is conservative Facebook posts.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, if you get a Facebook feed or text or some kind of like textual thing, you're not going to get a streaming video. You're not going to be able to watch. It's really hard for them to get the kind of information. And people have to go to the library still to get online.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of large percentage of people out there that don't have cable because they can't afford it. They don't have DirecTV.
Yeah.
They can't afford it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It is something that we don't really realize or think about.
Yeah. Not everybody is like all hooked up.
No, definitely. So you grew up in Cleveland altogether?
Yeah. Right in the city.
Right in it.
Yeah.
And what was
Cleveland Public High School?
Really?
Yeah.
And what was the city like then? Because now you get the feeling like, you know, they got the grilled cheese place, they got Slimans corned beef.
Yeah, yeah.
They got the, you know, the fancy restaurants, and that's a good comedy club there, and there's a stadium.
There was only like a couple of hotels downtown you could really go to and stay.
But was
at.
It a thriving city that you remember?
No.
It was already dead.
No, this was River on Fire days.
Oh, really?
When I was growing up. Yeah, Mayor Perk caught us. I remember the river caught on fire when I was growing up there. Mayor Perk was doing we had a mayor called Mayor Perk, and he was doing some kind of opening with a blowtorch, some kind of constructive thing. His hair caught on fire.
Oh, yeah.
His wife, they had a chance to go meet the president, and his wife, it was his wife's bowling league night. They had a bowling league championship, so they didn't go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They didn't like the president? Was it a...
It was, no, I think it was honestly just like a bowling...
A bowling issue?
Yeah, a bowling issue. I gotta, you know? when I was growing up, like Johnny Carson would be making Cleveland jokes.
Well, it was always sort of a punchline, no?
Yeah, but it was like especially big then.
I think Paul Thomas Anderson's father used to host a weirdo show.
He was the ghoul.
The ghoul.
Yes.
Yeah.
The most popular movie show host in Cleveland history, probably.
And that was in Cleveland, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, he was Goulardi.
Goulardi. That was
the ghoul was after Goulardi.
Yeah, Goulardi.
Yeah, so in the
late 60s. You remember him?
Oh, man. Are you kidding me? That was like, he was like a king then. Well, the ghoul was, I was more the, Goulardi was when I was little, and then he moved.
Out
to
here.
Come to L.A., yeah. He was friends with
Tim Conway.
Tim Conway, right. Yeah. They were like a comedy writing team in Cleveland, and they used to do little comedy bits. And Tim Conway moved to L.A., got McHale's Navy, and he told
Goulardi.
Goulardi, yeah.
What's his real name?
Ernie Anderson. Yeah, Ernie Anderson.
Father of the genius.
Yeah.
He might be a genius, too.
Ernie Anderson was great. He worked at the station, and he would do an after-school movie show, and he would wear like the Van Dyke goatee thing that you would get in the back of the comic books.
Right.
And he wore a beetle wig.
Yeah.
That people, you would be able to buy this thing called a beetle wig, which is like a, I don't know, this weird hair wig that you would buy. And he wear the lab coat with kind of like buttons with sayings on it, like Sakatumi and stuff like that on his button, Band the Bomb and all those buttons that were popular then.
Yeah.
And he wore sunglasses with one of the sunglass things busted out.
Yeah.
And he would say things, hey kids, over there, scratch glass, turn blue. And he had all these like catchphrases, and he would.
I love that those guys do gigs. Like, you know, it's like local radio too. They do shows. They, you know.
Yeah. His thing was he had the Goulardi All Stars. It was like a softball and basketball. So he would like come to your high school or junior high and play against your teachers and faculty.
Yeah.
To raise money for charity.
Yeah.
So they would come like, hey, we're going to be at Euclid High School this Friday playing our All-Stars playing Euclid High School faculty. Yeah. And every kid would show up. Wow. And Goulardi, the ghoul did that especially. And I think Goulardi did too. But Goulardi would, when he was on like Friday nights, he would get like an 80 share.
Yeah. The kids were watching.
Everybody watched. Like, you go to school on Monday, everybody was talking about what Goulardi did or what the ghoul did after him. The ghoul worked for Goulardi. He was the guy in the monkey suit that would be around in the background. So he would do all these stupid sketches and interrupt the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it would be like Creature from the Black Lagoon, let's say he was showing.
Right.
And then when the creature came up, he would start playing Papa Umau Mau.
Right, okay.
And then he'd pop up like in the screen like he was being attacked by the creature Papa Umau Mau. Just like do that.
So it was like pre-Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, he would do crazy stuff. And then he would read like letters. But one of his main things that he would do is people would send in models that they made.
Yeah.
Of like cars, ships, like whatever the model was.
Right.
And he would blow up the model with an M80. Or firecrackers. Like he would light an M80 and step off and it would blow up on camera.
And that's why they'd send him in?
Well, no, he would just like, that was one of the bits that he would do. Okay. Like, we're going to, hey, so-and-so, sending this 15 years old from Parma, sending this model kit car, be all decked out, and he would like put an M80 and just blow it up. It was really fun to watch. But then he got so popular doing that one time, I read a book about him, somebody in local Cleveland wrote a book about him. Somebody back then, and this is like in the late 60s, made a stick of dynamite at home out of M80 and stuff, and just like took all the gunpowder, made their own stick of dynamite,
right,
got on the fucking public bus, took it down to the TV station, hey, I have something for the ghoul that I want to drop off to him, you make sure he gets it, sure thing. They get him the stick of dynamite. Can you imagine? They get him the stick of dynamite. He's this pretty cool, and he goes to blow up a model and he lights it and he like runs away. And it blows the glass out of the sound booth.
Oh, my God.
It blows up so big, the glass in the sound booth shattered.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit he did. I think he got suspended or something for that.
Lucky he didn't kill people.
I think Goulardi, the guy that took off from, got suspended for blowing up a mouse with a firecracker.
Oh, my God.
He blew up a mouse because he thought it'd be funny.
Yeah. You know, that tradition of radio still exists. And it happened in Cleveland, dude. I was in Cleveland doing
is on TV.
I know.
Yeah.
But like I was in Cleveland doing a morning show. It's just strange that I just realized this might, I think it was Cleveland where, you know, when you do morning shows, you don't know what the crew's going to be like. You don't know what their angle is. You know, if they're shock jocks.
No.
But I get there and everyone, there's panic. There's a guy running down the hall. You know, he's got no shirt on. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? You know, it's 7:30, you know? And like, I'm like, what's going on?
It's noon to them.
But apparently it's some guy going like, oh, the puke can't. And didn't work. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it was. See, this is radio. I guess there's a video element in it, but they'd taken a weed blower and some guy was going to make himself vomit milk into this weed blower. And it was going to, the idea, but everything, there was puke all over the ceiling. I had to go to another studio and I'm like, is this really where radio's
nah,
at?
Man, it's unbelievable. People in Cleveland had the real, because the city was getting made fun of so much.
Yeah.
Like everybody, like Cleveland was exactly the punchline. Like a full Cleveland outfit was like a leisure suit,
right?
Like a light blue leisure suit, head to sure. toe. They called it that. They called that a full Cleveland.
They did.
That's what it's called.
Yeah,
look it up. That's a full Cleveland.
I wore a full Cleveland on this first night of my bar mitzvah.
So you grew
on
up
Friday night. I wore a full Cleveland in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Right, and at the time, like the Indians were like the last place team every year. The Cleveland Indians never won anything. They would play at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, which held like 70,000 people. That's where the Browns played. The Browns were decent.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Indians always sucked. So I would go to, it would have like, seriously, seat like 70,000 people, 68,000, something like that.
Yeah.
And they would have 5,000 people there.
Yeah.
Totally empty.
Oh.
I would go with my friends when I was in high school, and we would buy a bleacher ticket and then just walk up to like the box seats
yeah.
and just have a seat.
Or wherever just hang we out, wanted. Drink beers.
Like, who was going to stop us?
Yeah.
Right. They're barely right. looking at tickets.
It was just something to do, right?
Just something to do.
But so, like, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
Two older brothers.
It was the three, and like, in
and
life,
my mom.
And your mom.
My
your...
dad died when I was real 8 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm questioning that, but that,
no,
that,
yeah.
that's pretty horrible.
I made it up. Makes me look. Makes you look more pathetic.
I don't know why I always I do that all the time. I'm like, really? Like, why?
Well, I barely remember him, too, because he was always sick. He had, like, heart attack, stroke, blood clots. He had
oh, really?
Brain tumor. He had all kinds of problems.
Was it genetic? Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, good.
He just didn't, I mean, I don't know. Didn't yeah. eat right or whatever. No, that,
that's
back
a
there.
Lot. What, just eating
you love beer and steak.
Yeah. Oh, that.
So, you know.
So you remember.
He drank a lot. He was a big drinker.
Oh.
My mom used to tell me funny stuff. I don't tell this to a lot of people on public anyway.
Yeah.
But what the hell? My mom used to tell me these funny stories about my dad.
Right.
And one of the
funny. Quote unquote funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's one of my mom's funny stories about my dad. And they were all like her funny, woe is me stories.
Right.
Like these, can you believe my luck stories that
right.
are supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
Or amusing.
Yeah.
But it's not like, let me tell you the story about your asshole dad.
Right. It was like, sort of cute.
Can you believe my luck?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, here's right. what happened to me. So. She told my dad once, ha
yeah.
ha ha,
yeah.
that if he ever came home drunk again, she was going to call the police.
Right.
Ha ha ha.
Uh-huh.
And he comes home drunk.
Yeah.
She calls the police.
Yeah.
The cop that shows up is a drinking buddy of my dad's.
Right.
And says, sees my dad and goes, oh my God, Lou, are you okay? That's my mom's funny story. And I always thought like, oh, yeah, haha. That yeah, was like a yeah. funny fit. And then sure. I like lately I've been thinking like, wow, how bad does it have to get with a couple?
Right.
Where the woman goes, do that again, motherfucker.
And
I'm calling the cops. Right. Behave like this again in my house in
yeah.
front of the kids with me. I'm going to call because I don't know what else to do. I've screamed at you. I've done everything else that the kids probably didn't see.
Yeah.
I'm going to call the police. What do you think of that? And then she finally has to call the police and it doesn't work out.
And it's a cute story years
later. Now it's a cute story, yeah. And wow. Or he, one time my dad lost his job, he got laid off. He was a draftsman for General Motors. He worked at the tank plant on Brook Park. And he got laid off and it was around Christmas time. So him and his buddy decided they were gonna sell Christmas trees at the gas station.
Yeah.
So they paid, got a bunch of Christmas trees, and every night he would come home. How's it going? Ah, we're not doing so good. Ah, Christmas trees aren't. This is one of her funny stories.
Yeah.
Turns out they were doing well.
Yeah.
And he would take all the money he made in cash selling the Christmas trees and go out drinking with his friends.
Hey, right.
Instead of bringing it home.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious?
He's out of work. He's got three kids. And he's drinking the Christmas tree money.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
But you had to put all this together later to really assess it.
Yeah.
And you don't have any real recollection of the guy.
No, to me, that's like, no, and I don't have any real recollection. The whole family, even like his side of the family told me this funny story about my dad. The time he was out drinking with his friends and he threw up out of the car.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. And he threw up his false teeth. So his false teeth went flying out of his mouth when he threw it at the side of the car. So he wanted to put an ad in the paper to try to get his false teeth back.
Yeah.
So he calls the Cleveland Plain dealer. Hey, this is Woo. Can we? I lost false teeth. And they didn't even put like false teeth in the ad. It was something like lost sheep or something like that instead of false teeth.
Right.
It wasn't lost sheep. It was something else.
Of the way he was talking?
Yeah. And it was like, isn't that funny how your dad couldn't put the right ad in the paper because he threw up his false teeth?
It sounds like you might have been better off not knowing this guy.
I mean, we did barely. I remember playing catch with him in the yard one time, and he took me to a Cleveland Barons hockey game once. So I did a few things with him.
Are your brothers older or younger?
Oh, both the older, 6 and 12 years older.
Do they remember him?
Yeah, he was a real disciplinarian. Like, he used to beat the hell out of him.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he kept a strap hanging up on a hook at the top of the basement
stairs. A drunken disciplinarian. The worst.
Yeah, so my oldest brother, Neil, when he turned 18, he just left.
That's a sure sign it wasn't great. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my middle brother had a little, they talked about how I got spoiled.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get beat up as much as they did.
Because there's a 6-year difference between you and the youngest one?
Yeah, it was 6 years, 6 years, and 6 years.
Different.
So when my brother, when he turned 18, I was 6.
Yeah.
And when I turned 12, my brother Roger was off to college. Right. So it's just like me and my mom through those formative years.
So your mom had to hold the ship down.
Yeah, another funny story. We were having spaghetti dinner, and I didn't want to eat my dinner. I was little. I had to be 5 or something.
Yeah.
Didn't want to eat, 4 years old, whatever old I was. And my dad was like, you're not getting up out of this chair unless you eat till you eat your dinner. And that's it.
Yeah.
He's going to make me sit there till I ate. So, hey, Dad, I cleared my plate. It's all taken care of. Good.
Yeah.
Months later, 2-3 months later, he's going down to the basement where he kept his paint cans because he has to touch up the molding or whatever.
Yeah.
He opens up the paint can. There's the spaghetti. I dumped all the spaghetti in the paint can to hide it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you, this is one of my favorite funny dad stories
that
my mom used to tell me. There was a Dairy Queen in my neighborhood that was within walking distance. It was like a 15-minute walk, but we drove there that day. I was like 3, so it was my brother Neil was 14. My brother Roger was 8. I was 2. So my dad and Neil, who's 14, get in line at this Dairy Queen because they're having a sale on Sundays. So there's a big line, and my mom said it was like a 40-minute line. Like
yeah.
A big, long waiting line. So she sat in the car with the 8-year-old and me. I was only 2.
Yeah.
Keeping them busy, keeping us busy while my dad waited in the line this whole time.
Yeah.
They buy 4 sundaes.
Yeah.
2 and 2, Neil and my dad.
Yeah.
Who's 14. My brother Neil's 14. And when they get to the car, my mom tells me, for some reason, my dad yells at Neil, give me those, because he thinks Neil's going to drop them or something. So now he has 4 sundaes, and he's trying to open the car door at the same time. He drops 3 of the sundaes.
Yeah.
Then what does he do? He takes the 4th sundae and he throws it. They get in the car. They go home. Nobody gets it.
Nobody gets a sundae.
No. Fuck it. Nobody gets anything. Fuck it.
I would have done that. I might have done that.
In front of the whole family.
Oh, man.
I'm going out for a drink. Slam.
You do that again, I'm calling the police.
Oh. Call them. See if I give a fuck, bitch.
So your mother must have been tough.
Well, she was like a church lady.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like a sweet church lady. So
She just took it, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
And then, but once he was gone, your relationship with her must have been solid.
Yeah, well, she was like, I remember I was a latchkey kid.
Right.
And I remember when I first heard of latchkey kids, they were like, oh, these poor latchkey kids coming home by themselves, nobody at home.
Yeah.
And I loved being a latchkey kid. Are you kidding me?
From what age? From like 8, 9?
From like 12, 13, I would come home.
Because she was working?
She had to work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'd come home and there was there's a key hidden or I had a key. I don't know how it worked. But I would come home, there'd be nobody there, and I'd make my own sandwich.
Watch
or
TV.
Whatever. Yeah. Watch cartoons. Three Stooges.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It's like, God bless latchkey kids, man.
So what drove you to music? I mean, like, how'd you get involved with the band stuff?
Oh, there was a guy that came to my house who was selling music lessons from the local music place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a music store on Memphis Avenue.
Yeah.
And, some guy showed up and like, hey, let's talk about music lessons. I don't know if she went to them and he showed up. I don't know how it happened. My mom played piano.
Okay.
And we had a piano in the house. My dad liked to fool around with a ukulele and stuff. So they were kind of, you know.
Yeah,
they
liked music around.
Yeah, back then, you know, you had to entertain yourself.
Sure.
And so TVs were only like 10 inches.
Yeah, small. Sure. Like black and white. Yeah.
Yeah. So he asked us what we wanted to play and I was 5. Yeah. And my brother Neil wanted to learn to play guitar. My brother Roger said drums. And I had just, there was a local talent show that was on Saturdays or Sunday. It was on Sundays on Cleveland TV. Yeah. And I saw some accordion guy on this talent show. Polka bands and stuff are really big in Cleveland.
Sure, yeah.
There was always like some local tap dance group or, you know, guy playing the accordion.
Was it big, like a Polish community, Ukrainian community?
Yeah,
like
a lot of German, Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of skis.
Yeah, yeah,
in
skis.
Our town.
Sure, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. And Ischewitzes.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Tons of them. And so I said, oh, I'd love to play the accordion. So I was playing accordion. I remember when I was like second grade, first grade, having to go like at Christmas time, having to go like class to class playing like the two Christmas songs I knew on the accordion.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's, this is Drew Carey from this other class. He knows how to play the accordion. He's going to play Silent Night. And then, okay, get out of here and go to the next class. I remember that.
Did you like that? Do you remember liking that? Do you remember like, you know, it?
I don't know if I liked it or didn't like it. It was just, I had to do it. It was like homework.
But at some, you know, when you play music publicly, I'm just trying to track, you know, where you're like,
well, and
oh,
I was like, I remember
audience.
Grade school that I was like in choir and band, and we, you know, I wasn't shy about getting up in front of people. So
yeah.
I remember being in like we had a barbershop quartet number.
Yeah.
We sang Give My Regards to Broadway.
There you go.
You know, and some yeah. other song, and it was like eight of us.
Yeah.
So like, I was one of the eight kids that wasn't afraid to get up in yeah. front of somebody and sing.
Yeah.
And when I did Pirates of Penzance, the only reason I played Frederick, and the only reason I had that part was like the lead part. And the only reason I got it, because I volunteered for it, because nobody else would do it.
Right.
Like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't afraid to get up there.
But you didn't, like, were you compelled or interested in comedy or performing, or you just sort of like...
No, but kinda... I was in choir, and they had a... Like, I wouldn't do that on my own. I
yeah.
didn't say to everybody, hey, we should do a play.
Right.
I just happened to be in choir, and this guy, the teacher was like, happened to want to do that. And he goes, does anybody want to do this part? And I went, oh, yeah, I'll do it.
And that was it.
And that was it.
But
that's how I made all my decisions back then.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do it. Why not?
But did you watch comedy? Were you a fan
of
comedy?
Yeah, when I would, I was one of those kids that would get the TV guide and I would highlight my shows for the week.
Oh, yeah.
Were
they?
But I highlight, but I would underline sure. them or circle yeah. them. Wild Wild West, Man from U.N.C.L.E. F Troop, that was one of my shows.
Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible, yeah,
sure.
I like that
F Troop was funny. Larry Storch was funny.
I loved F Troop, man. If I looked on The Tonight Show and there was a comedian, if it said like, comedian Steve Martin or comedian so-and-so,
yeah.
comedy group The Committee, you know.
Oh, right.
I would go like, oh, I want to watch that.
You
so
liked them.
I would stay up extra to watch whatever the comedy act was on
yeah.
The Tonight Show.
Right.
Maybe I wouldn't watch the full 90 minutes, which is what it used to be back then.
Right, hour and a half, imagine, yeah.
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 And then like last 30 minutes, we're talking about to a guy that wrote a book.
Yeah. Listen to you, like, who the hell is this
about
guy?
About the book.
Wrote a book. He just wrote a book, this guy.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
That people were like, I don't know.
Norman Mailer's on for 25 minutes.
I can't imagine that now.
It would be great.
It would be great, but that's what podcasts are for now.
I guess so, but I think the nature of you know, entertainment became intensified with attention spans and the ability they needed to hold people. I think when there was three stations and it was 12 at night, they were like, we can put Norman Mailer on. You know, that the ability to hold people was a little easier.
I was explaining to somebody that I would watch TV until the TV station went off the air.
Oh yeah, just like,
and they were like, till the TV station did what? And I go, they would go off the air.
Yeah, the colors would come on.
They would stop broadcasting
yeah.
from like 1 yeah. in the morning till 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody to... What?
Yeah, there was
nothing
on.
There would just
on.
Be nothing there?
Just color bars.
No.
They
would play the national anthem.
Yeah, and then color bars, right?
Yeah. That'd be that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, and there were three networks.
No TV after an UHF.
Yeah. UHF, what was on the UHF?
Channel 43 and Channel 61 in Cleveland.
Were there three Stooges stations?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's a good name for them.
Bowery Boys and Three Stooges.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yes.
Maybe a Laurel and Hardy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to love the Bowery Boys, but sure. I guess they were just like the cheapest one to get, right?
Dead End Kids. I don't know why. You know, I used to watch in my grandparents' house. It used to be like Channel 11 or something. I don't know if it was UHF, but they definitely ran the hell out of, you know, all that stuff. You know, you could watch Laurel and Hardy. You could watch the Three Stooges.
Little Rascals.
Watch your Little Rascals, yeah. You could watch Dead End Boys, Bowery Boys. I think they became one. One became the other. Yeah, it was great to be able to see that stuff. Like, I guess it was closer to the source. I mean, what are we? You're in your late 50s. I'm in my mid 50s. So at that time, I mean, those things weren't that far behind us.
No, even, you know? Even Saturday morning, I would highlight like my favorite cartoon shows.
Yeah, like what was those? Like Johnny Quest?
I love Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
The Johnny Quest theme song is a great piece of like,
I don't remember
orchestral jazz.
I don't remember.
It's great, man.
Really?
Oh my God.
God, now amazing. I want to hear it.
And hard to play.
Really? You tried with your trumpet?
No, I have a, there was a band I see in Vegas all the time, Lon Bronson band. Mm-hmm. I've never seen Vegas, and they played, they learned it and played it for me once.
Oh, that's great.
And they're all like these horn session guys, and it's just like hearing it live with a full like 16 piece horn band. That Johnny Quest theme is a great.
So do you think, do you go to college? Do you do the whole college thing?
Yeah. So I skipped my senior year in high school because I had enough credits to graduate.
Yeah.
And all I needed to do was take senior English in the summer.
Okay.
So I took senior English in the summer because I was like, why would I stick around? I'm already bored.
Yeah.
Took senior English, didn't have a commencement or anything. I just went to the principal's office, got my diploma. And I applied to Kent State and I got in. And my first major was criminal justice studies because I used to watch a lot of cop shows back then. There was a show called Police Story.
Yeah.
Joseph Wamba's Police Story. He was a big...
Joseph Wamba. Yeah.
He was a big famous crime writer.
The Hell Street Blues, right? Was that him or Joseph Wamba? No. The Onion Field or...
Yeah.
Okay.
He wrote The Onion Field and The Choir Boys. The
Choir Boys, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And a couple other ones. He was an LAPD cop and he was famous for writing
books
about the LAPD and... being a cop.
The dark side.
Yeah. They're always like, you know,
right.
Cops with drinking problems, cops with things, like in the underfield, like those guys. They always had this bad background, you know, like psychologically, how damaged they were after the event or whatever happened.
Yeah.
And
that's what compelled you to do.
Yeah. So I thought, I'll be a criminal justice. That looks like a fun job.
Yeah.
Cop, because that's all I liked reading about. And because I read crime stories. What a fucking idiot.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't really. But I didn't know anything about setting goals or believing in myself. And I just, you know, somebody would suggest something and I would do it.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's the...
Well, that was my family. It was just like...
No dad around. He was a disaster. He's
And my mom
gone.
Just had to get a job, you know, to pay bills. So that's what she did. And... you know, I don't. She was a school secretary. I bet if she had her druthers, she could do something else. You know, but she had a family to kid to raise.
I think it was. I wasn't a bad impulse to go into criminal justice. It was interesting. You were interested in it.
Well, my first grade point average was a 0.5.
Oh, good work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't take to college.
No. No. Well, I loved college.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I love being in fraternity. I love partying.
Sure.
I smoked marijuana for the first time.
Were you a popular guy?
Yeah. Super popular. You know, parties. I was social director of my fraternity. But as far as like what you're supposed to be at college for, like, to get a degree.
Yeah.
Eh.
Did you finish college?
No. I got kicked out twice.
And then what'd you do?
I worked as a waiter. I never had a job for more than a year.
Yeah.
Like, or if I did, it was like 14 months.
You know? Was it miserable? But, were you drinking a lot? What was going on?
I was like a functioning alcoholic in college. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Like
I probably didn't help with the studies.
The weekend started on Thursday. I was one of those guys, you know, happy hour starts on Thursday, maybe even Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, and Thursday was like half price. Wednesday was ladies night. Thursday was half off. And I knew every night of the week, which bar to be at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Tuesdays. This is the spot that's hot.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And Friday and Saturday was just like a lost weekend every weekend.
All right, so you're doing that, and then you get jobs. And
then my fraternity got me high. I wasn't a big stoner, but I would, you know, they got me high for the first time.
Yeah. Did that stick?
I mean, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what'd you end up doing? So you're working as a waiter, and you're just...
Yeah, what? Doing nothing.
And
I was a... When I was in college, because I always watched these comics on TV and stuff, when I lived in Las Vegas. I moved back and forth to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
One time I was in, when I was...
When you were in college? Or
yeah,
after
like the
college?
First, after the first, when I was 18 and in college, I had a minor suicide attempt it wasn't a serious one. I took, you're supposed to take sleeping pills, right? If you want to kill yourself. So I took... sleepies or something like that.
Were you depressed?
Yeah. I should have been not drinking and on antidepressants, and I should have met with somebody about like what aptitude I have and what goals I want to do. I should have sat down with somebody like that.
Did you have depression problems your whole life? Maybe that's why you were
like, I was a nail biter all through junior high and high school. Like, I used to bite the skin of the pads of my fingers and strip the skin off the pads of my fingers, where like my fingers would be bloody and I could barely hold a pencil.
All right.
Like, it would hurt to hold a pencil or pen in my hand.
Yeah.
So I used to like destroy my fingers and, you know, as a form of like self-hate.
Sure.
And when I would walk through, I tell this to people, when I walk through like the hall in like junior high and high school, and you're trying to get around kids, and I would never say excuse me.
Yeah.
I would always say I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And I would never, like, I'm looking you in the eye right now. I would be like, yeah, I would be talking to you like here. I wouldn't look at you in the eye.
Wow.
I'd be so embarrassed to look at you in the eye, or like, I wouldn't feel like I would, I don't know.
Just, so alcohol must have just loosened you up and to kind of make you feel better.
Yeah. I was one of those guys that had jokes memorized.
Yeah.
Like, I would buy like Larry Wilder, you know, joke books.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's his name, right?
Yeah, I think so. He had like 10,000 jokes, or had it, or
no, he had like the official Polish joke book, the official Irish joke book,
the official Jewish joke book,
official Italian joke book. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember those with the cartoons on front.
Yeah, Larry Wilder, I think was his name. Then I also had 2,000 insults for all occasions.
2,000 insults with the court jester on front.
Yeah, and I had 2,000 more insults for all occasions. He had a follow up book.
Yeah, yeah, I remember those.
So you're so ugly, she could make a train, took a dirt road.
So this was this is how
that
you,
was one of them.
A way to communicate.
Yeah, I had all these jokes memorized. And if I listened
just to get through life,
I'd listen to morning radio, or I'd hear a comic on TV on the Tonight Show, and I would hear the jokes they had, and I would like, oh, that's a good joke. And I would say, I would credit them. I wouldn't make it my joke. I would go, oh, so-and-so was on TV.
This is just in a social environment, like when you're working at the restaurant?
Yeah, and I remember there was a time where I really hated Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Like, I was, when he first came out, I was like such a huge fan. Like, he's great. Like, one of the most innovative comedians
that
ever lived.
Yeah.
But then when I was in college and my fraternity, you could not go anywhere to any party without somebody going, excuse me. You couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
Everybody. Or they would be rolling a joint and go, hey, let's get small.
Yeah, yeah.
They would do that.
Right.
And I was just like, what the fuck with this guy already? Yeah.
Enough.
Enough.
Well, when did you try to kill yourself?
So it was like that. I was like just about, I was 18. I turned, my birthday's in May. So it was like in the spring when I was 18. So I took these like over the counter sleeping pills. I could have swallowed the whole bottle. And I just would have slept 10 hours.
Yeah. Right. So no one knew that you tried to kill yourself?
Well, there was a party downstairs. And I would just get, I remember being mad that they were at a party and mad that they were enjoying themselves. Mm. I remember being really angry, like, who the fuck are these people having fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
No, I used to feel that.
What the fuck is with these people with dates?
Don't they know?
Having fun.
Yeah.
The fuck is wrong with them?
Yeah.
You know, just thinking like that generally. And I went and I swallowed a bunch of these over-the-counter sleeping pills, washed it down with a beer, laid in bed. And I was a big Christian kid when I was in junior. I was a Pentecostal Christian when I was in junior high and high school.
Yeah.
That really fucked me up royal, to be honest.
Because your mom?
No, my mom was a Presbyterian, like a regular Presbyterian church. And then there was a friend of mine in junior high that belonged to a Pentecostal church, an Assembly of God church. And he invited me to one of his youth group meetings.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up going to the church service and I got saved. They had like, they're really powerful preachers at all these churches.
Yeah, sure.
And they, you know, they make a case.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're a sinner and if you're feeling bad and you want Jesus to help you.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel bad about yourself? Sure. You're feeling lost and lonely?
A little bit, yeah.
12-year-old?
Yeah.
12-and-a-half-year-old?
Yeah, I 13, am a little.
Confused about things?
Yeah, I'm scared.
Come on up here. Jesus will save you. Jesus loves you.
Oh, my God, what's happening?
Come on up here and pray with us, and it'll be all right.
And then they dip you in the water and grab
your
head?
No, it wasn't water. It was like I stood in front and he lay a hand on your head, and I was like crying on the ground, talking in tongues, like that, all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
Like right before I turned 13.
It got you.
Yeah. And then I was going to this church all the time, and I wouldn't go to my mom's church anymore. I would just go to this Pentecostal church, and I would go like, you know, I would try to save kids at school. I got in trouble at Bible camp. I went to like a regular Bible camp, Presbyterian, and I got in trouble because I saved like three of the kids, and they were all emotional and crying, and they pulled me aside and they told me not to do that anymore.
Dang, stop saving people.
Yeah, and I really want people would ask me what I wanted to do for when I grow up, and I want to be a preacher. I want to be a minister and tell people about Jesus.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted to do.
And that,
and I would pass out Chick Tracks in my high school.
Sure,
I
love
junior
those.
High.
Yeah, the little comic books.
Well, I read them, and they weren't like kitschy, me. They, I was like, fuck, man, look at this. Yeah. The world's going to end. You better get right, or you're going to go to hell and burn. And,
yeah.
And I remember there was a thing I bought at one of the youth group things. You used to go to these overnight things. This thing in Columbus, and they had Andre Crouch and the Disciples were playing. They were the big headlining band.
Uh-huh.
And so the whole youth group went down there, and we were all like 13, 14. We just tore up the hotel and, you know, pet burping contest and stuff like that. Yeah. And like, hey, look how big a shit I took. You know, look at that. I remember that. People like bragging about the size of their shit.
Yeah. That's a big exciting
thing. You're a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah, you're 14.
Yeah.
So when did this start to fall apart on you?
I bought this thing called the Jesus Person Maturity Manual, and it was like an 8x11 booklet, you know, a little thin. It was like, you know, 50 pages maybe.
Yeah.
And it had a chapter on like, you know, responsibility and obeying your parents, and they had a chapter on masturbation and how masturbation was bad for you and you shouldn't masturbate.
Oof.
Which was like, I thought I was going to hell.
Yeah, you just it's the
every
only...
day all day.
Yeah, sure.
I'd like be on the bus going to school and get a boner.
Yeah,
for like no reason.
Right, sure.
Out of nowhere, I wouldn't even be thinking about sex or anything.
Yeah,
I'd just get a boner.
I miss those days.
And I'd have to cover with my trapper keeper.
Yeah.
Thank God for the Mead trapper keeper, man. The boner coverer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is.
Both hands walking weird.
Yeah,
yeah. So you just thought you were going to hell all the time?
Yeah.
And but what when you were 18 and you got into the dark place, had Jesus left by then?
No, I was still confused. I remember I went to see a counselor. I can't believe I'm telling you all this stuff. I remember I had to see a counselor in college.
Yeah.
Because I was feeling guilty about masturbating still.
Oh, really?
Every time I jerked off, I was like, fuck, I got to quit doing this.
Because I'm going to hell.
Yeah.
And what did the counselor in college say?
It's got to be bad.
What did he say?
Well, I saw they had like a mental health counselor that you could see at the college. So I went to see that guy, and he goes, oh, go see this friend of mine who's a Methodist minister.
Oh, a minister
near the campus. So I went to see a Methodist minister, and he was like, don't worry about it. I masturbate. My wife masturbates. It's not against the Bible at all. And he showed me the verses where it's fine.
Oh, good.
And I was like, okay. And then I didn't feel bad about it.
Yeah. You seem to be qualified. You know what you're talking about.
But then he was a Methodist. He wasn't really a Pentecostal guy.
Right, sure.
So he wasn't as hardcore.
Of course. He went to the right guy.
That would cause some doubt in my head.
It
like,
did.
This guy's like a lightweight because he's a Methodist.
Yeah, he's not really playing by the old school rule book.
He's not really as full Christian as
So you just didn't let yourself off the hook, huh? You were beating yourself up.
Biting my nails, feeling bad about beating off.
And that was it.
Failing college.
And then some people were having... and then the people having a good time pushed you over the edge.
Pushed me over the edge. And then I took this beer, and then I was like, well, what's going to happen to me now that I took this pills? Like,
yeah.
In like 10 minutes, I'm like, fuck, am I going to go to hell? What happens after I die?
Yeah.
I have no idea, and it scared the shit out of me. And I got up, and I found one of my fraternity brothers. I go, hey, man, I just took some sleeping pills. I tried to kill myself. And they got me in a car, and they drove me to the Kent State Health Center. It was like the little like clinic that they had. And they gave me Epicac.
Yeah.
And made me throw up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sominex. That's what I took.
Sominex. Yeah.
And I remember clearly because I'm not going to say his name, but I don't want to embarrass him, but he's a lawyer in Pittsburgh now. I want to say hi. How you doing?
Yeah.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah.
If you're out there, I'm not going to say your last name. I don't want to embarrass you. But he was a really good friend of mine. And I used his fake ID to get into bars. And I was really close with him. So he went with, I think he's the one I found. He was older than me.
Yeah.
Took me to the clinic, and I was throwing up Epicac on the toilet, and he was behind me, like holding my shoulders and holding me up. I think he had his knees on my back, like holding me up.
Uh-huh.
And he was singing, take Sominex tonight and sleep. While I was thrown up. So that was that. And then I had to see a counselor. I went to see a counselor for a few sessions, and you know, I get kicked out of school.
And you're working as a waiter.
Yeah, just...
And then you joined the military?
Yeah, I joined the Marine Corps at one point. I was living in Las Vegas, and I...
Why'd you choose Vegas? Did you...
Well, after I tried to kill myself, like, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I can't go back to college or anything.
Yeah.
So my dad was dead, and I was still getting his Social Security checks.
Yeah.
And they had a thing back there in Greyhound called an Ameripass.
Yeah.
And you could buy I don't know how much it was, but you buy like a thing for like a month,
uh-huh.
and a 30-day Ameripass, and you could ride any Greyhound bus anywhere by just showing that pass and hopping on. So you could see America.
Yeah.
That was the ad.
Yeah.
And So I bought an Ameripass, and I had money from my dad's Social Security checks that I was getting. So I took that money, and I had a backpack, a nylon backpack. I think it was orange.
Yeah.
And I hopped a Greyhound bus. I remember being like, my mom at the Greyhound station just like crying, hoping I'd be okay. And yeah. I was like crying. I was, don't worry, mom, I'll be fine.
You just picked Vegas out of nowhere?
Sobbing in the car. I didn't pick Vegas at all. My brother lived out in California. My brother Neil lived in Dana Point.
Yeah.
My oldest brother, Neil, and I hardly ever saw him. So I thought I'd just go out and see Neil.
Right.
So I hopped a Greyhound West. I think I stopped in Indianapolis, saw my aunt. And then I would sleep on the bus at night.
Yeah.
I didn't, not one hotel room. I would sleep on the bus. I was 19 years. I just turned 19. Sleep on the bus at night. And whatever I woke up in the morning, I would get off the bus and I would go to the men's room and I would wash my pits and my crotch and just like do a little like whore bath, put on a fresh shirt and whatever, and then hang out. I'd find a diner near the Greyhound station. I would have a cup of coffee and whatever breakfast I could afford. And I would just like walk around, you know, sit on a bench, watch people.
Yeah.
I might have had a book to read or something, probably. And then around dinner time-ish, I would see when the next bus was coming in through going west.
Just get on.
I would show my pass, hop on the bus, store my shit.
Crash.
Watch the scenery. And when it got dark, I would sleep. And then I would sleep till the morning. I would do that. I went that all the way across country. And I stopped in Vegas. And I got off the bus in Vegas. And I was like, holy shit, this place is amazing. I remember I stayed at a hotel. It was down by the Hacienda, which is not there anymore. It was now Mandalay Bay.
Uh-huh.
Like out by there.
Yeah.
It was used to be the Hacienda. And it was a motel across the street. And I stayed there because I had adult movies.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, great, porn in the room. That's what I need after a long bus trip. And it was like the worst. I remember, I think I watched like 5 minutes of it. It was like the worst.
Yeah.
Like unbeatable to.
Yeah, yeah. Because like nothing happens.
Like you couldn't beat off to this if you're the horniest guy in the world. You wouldn't want to beat off to this porn.
So that was disappointing.
Yeah. And I left my shit there, and it was a nasty room, too. It wasn't that great.
Yeah.
You know, of course.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
With the free porn in the
room.
What
did I know?
Yeah.
And then I walked from there all the way down the strip, all the way downtown.
Wow.
And back, and just marveled at how big it was and the signs.
All the lights, yeah.
Man.
It's hypnotizing.
Like, and then I'd walk in and be like, the cocktail waitresses were all like the most beautiful women I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here? And people are playing for $25 a hand. Are you kidding me?
Right.
What?
Yeah.
What are these rich people wasting their money on? Like,
but you loved it.
I was blown away.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with it. And then I saw my brother in California, took the bus back, same thing, washing up, the same thing, no money,
right.
No hotel room. And when I got back, I said, I'm moving to Las Vegas.
To your mom?
Yeah. And I saved up whatever money I had.
Did she knew you tried to kill yourself? Did they tell her?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think she knew.
Oh.
But it was like not a serious. If I really wanted, I would have done something. But it was more like
Somnex.
A
crying
out
for help.
Yes.
So she said, "Go to your you can go to Vegas." So
I just was 19. I said, "I'm going to Vegas." I didn't ask her permission.
Yeah.
I just told her I was leaving again.
And how long did you live?
She
was
really worried about me.
What sounds like she should have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's still around?
No, she died. She was really worried about me when I got to be famous, and got the Tonight Show and Drew Carey Show and all this stuff. I think she was in denial. She couldn't believe it.
Oh, really?
Because I remember telling her one time, I was like third season already, like set for life.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't syndicated yet, but if I would have lived like a modest life the rest of my life, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like you could really like.
Sure.
I mean, I couldn't be driving a BMW 7 Series or whatever, but I could live.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about shit.
Yeah. She didn't believe it?
Couldn't believe it. And that's what she got. I can't believe it. I go, Mom. And at one point.
And she saw you on TV.
I was like, Mom, this is how much money I'm making every year.
Yeah.
And I think she started crying. She almost like fell out of her chair. She's like, never heard of that. And I go, whatever you want, just tell me and it's yours. Like, you want a car? You want to travel?
Yeah.
You want to take a cruise around the world? You want to, you know, free cable?
Yeah.
Whatever. But. And this is a person who grew up under depression. I remember getting mad. She remarried this guy, George. And I remember going over there, and that was a stand-up comic and successful at it. But this is before The Tonight Show. But you know, you want to, like, you're booking yourself, and you have to keep in touch, waiting for a booker to call you back.
Right.
And there was no cell phones back then. So I had an 800 number that I rented that they could call.
Right.
Some kind of service.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my mom didn't have a touchtone phone because she didn't want to pay the money for touchtone service.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you fucking, I really was like, how much is it a month? I was really like my arms out like this.
Yeah.
How much is it a month? It's like an extra $10 or $12. And I reached in my pocket and I think I grabbed $200 bills and I threw it at her. I go, here.
Get yourself some buttons.
Yeah, get yourself some buttons because I'm not losing work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't have a touchstone phone when I come see you. Well, otherwise, I can't come see you for an afternoon because I'm going to miss a call and I'm not going to be at work.
Yeah. Well, when you offered her anything she wanted, did she take you up on it?
I think she took a trip with one of her lady friends.
Oh, that's sweet.
They went on a trip. But she just wouldn't. Like the whole idea of it, like if I were to fly her out first class, here's my mom.
Yeah.
She came out to see me in LA. We went to the Beverly Center.
Yeah.
Which is a nice mall.
Right.
Not the nicest mall in
sure.
town.
Yeah.
But they're remodeling it now. It might be.
Yeah.
But it was a great mall.
It's tough for malls right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, at the time it was the place to go.
Yeah.
Went to the Beverly Center and my mom said this in the parking lot. Oh, look, there's one of those BMWs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one of those Range Rovers, and there's one of those Mercedes, and there's one of those Jaguars.
Yeah.
Like she just, there was a BMW parked in the parking lot. What?
Yeah. Oh, right. So you'd never seen, like she'd heard about them.
There's one of those BMWs.
Yeah. Yeah.
In my neighborhood growing up, if somebody said, hey, I got a new car, you would ask, oh, really? What year is it?
Right.
Nobody got a new car.
Right.
New to them.
So, okay, so when you're in Vegas, what do you do there? Would you just hang out for a while?
I worked as a bank teller, worked at a Denny's.
So what made you join the Marines?
Well, I lost my one job that I had, and I got...
In Vegas.
Yeah, and I was living in this motel that's been torn down, unfortunately, because I used to like to go back and visit it. It was by Fremont and Charleston.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with Las Vegas, Fremont and Charleston is not... It's not the greatest neighborhood in the world.
Yeah.
There's worse, surely. So I'm not saying I was in the worst neighborhood ever.
Right.
It wasn't like I was living in Cabrini Green in the 60s.
Right.
You know?
But not a great neighborhood.
Not a great neighborhood. And I actually got shot at once when I was there. Somebody shot at me from a car with a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said something to me and I was in the Marines then and I had my jacket. And I said, what the fuck did you say to the people in the car?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was like, dark. It was at night.
Yeah.
And I never could see who was in the car. And I heard, how would you like a hole in your glasses? And I said, why don't you suck my dick?
Or yeah.
Words to that effect.
Yeah.
And then bang.
And you ran.
No, there was a shot. And I'm in the Marine Corps. I know what a fucking gun sounds like.
Right.
They shoot at me. The car takes off. And I ran after them to get a license plate number.
That's what the Marines do to you.
Like a moron.
Yeah. But you were probably all jacked up.
I was all jacked up.
On marineness.
Yes, I was. And I was like, oh, you fucking with me? I'm bulletproof. Like, yeah. I really was like out of my mind. And it was an empty lot behind me at this place. So it didn't hit anything, I don't think. Huh. I mean, I don't know. I didn't hear it hit anything.
So you just joined the Marines because you'd like hit some sort of bottom and decided
yeah, and I needed a job and I was staying at my...
Did you think you needed discipline and you needed to...
No, I was at my... I lost my job in LA. I was living in Vegas. I was staying at this place that cost me $55 a week in rent. It was a motel.
Wow.
Cockroaches everywhere.
Ugh.
Miserable. I was washing my clothes in the tub.
Ew, God.
And hanging them up on, you know.
Yeah, really living it.
Yeah, rough days.
Yeah.
And then I lost my job, couldn't pay for the $55 a month, put everything in my car that had already been totaled.
Uh-huh.
It barely ran. And I had to steer it sideways to even get like a block. I shouldn't even be driving it. So I put all the stuff I had, like I had yearbooks and old love letters and pictures and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And I put it all in the car and my friend said, hey, come stay at my place overnight. So I went to my friend's. I remember I walked into McDonald's. They were having they had the Monopoly contest going on.
Yeah, sure.
And no, it said no purchase necessary. And I was starving.
Yeah.
So I go, I don't have to buy anything to get a card. And I go, nope. I go, can I just get a card then? They have me a Monopoly card and I ripped it. I want a Coke.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I savored every piece of ice.
Yeah. Tough days.
My friend made me like SpaghettiOs or something,
sure.
Or chili in a can when I got to his place.
Uh-huh.
And I was like so grateful. And I went back to my place the next day. I walked back to my place and somebody smashed the windows out of my car and stole everything. So I don't have any of my high school yearbooks or my original love letters for my first girlfriend or any of that stuff anymore.
And they haven't showed up?
No, somebody was looking for whatever and they Trashed it. Who knows? I looked in the garbage and everything was gone.
And that was one of those moments where you're just like, what is my life?
Yeah. So then I called the guy and I was crying. I had a couple change, like a quarter in my pocket. He goes, well, I'm about to go to Vegas, or I'm about to drive to LA with this other friend that we knew. Why don't you come with us? And I go, okay, I got a brother out there. So I got a hold of my brother and he said I could stay there. So I stayed at my brother Neil's. We drove out there. I got to stay at my brother Neil's. He lived in Mission Viejo, Dana Point area. And he got me a job driving a van for a he worked at a Porsche Audi dealer. He was the parts manager.
Yeah.
And he got me a job driving the van delivering parts around Southern California, which was a great job.
Yeah.
Because I would be like, oh, they need a Porsche muffler at this repair place. Go deliver it to
them. Thompson guide?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a, you know, Zenyatta Mandata, The Police. I would listen to that tape over and over again and like listen to K-Rock. And I was just like, I was in heaven.
Yeah.
And then the owner of the place found out that we were related and he didn't want a relative working for a relative because it'd be too easy to steal.
Huh.
If he was the parts manager and I was delivering parts.
Right.
So my brother goes, sorry, he found out that you were my brother. So I have to let you go. So then I was like sleeping on my brother's couch and I didn't have anything when I got there. I had like, that guy, that whoever broke into my car, like took clothes. All I had was like the clothes in my back.
Yeah.
Literally.
Right.
No underwear, sock, nothing.
But you could have bought stuff.
I didn't have any money.
Your brother didn't give you money?
My brother got me stuff.
Yeah.
So him and his wife took me out shopping for underwear and socks and t-shirt, like basic shit, toothbrush, deodorant. Like I had nothing.
Right.
And I was sleeping on the couch. So I said, well, what am I going to do now? I guess I'll just join the military. And I went to the recruiter's office and I was afraid to join the full-on military because I was like, what if I don't like it? Then I'm stuck.
Yeah.
So I just joined the reserves. And the first guy I met...
The Marine Reserves?
Yeah. So the first guy I met was the Marines. And I went to I looked in the Navy first and the Army first. And the Marine guy was like so together and their office was so together. And he was like, I don't know.
Yeah, Marines are pretty together.
And I thought, if I'm going to do this, I just go for it. You know... Don't go halfway. Just join the hardest one.
So you did.
Yeah. And I would like, honestly, thousands of people do it every year. It's not that bad.
But did you enjoy it? Did you
loved
did
it.
Change your life? You trained?
Loved it.
Got
three squares a day. I was in great shape. You know.
Did you have to go anywhere?
No, I was in the reserves.
Yeah.
Like we went to like 2 weeks training every summer.
But did you
went like to Germany was, one summer? Went
but
to
was
Virginia.
There a weekly thing you had to do?
Did one you? One weekend a month, 2 weeks during the summer.
And but when how what was the training like?
Well, I went to boot camp and I went to school.
Uh huh.
You know, boot camp was like 3 months altogether. It's like 11 and a half weeks, but then there's an orientation period and stuff. So you're in total, you're in boot camp for like 3 months.
So where does comedy start? How old were you? 40?
No, I was already like 28 years old or something when I started doing comedy.
But how did it start?
So so I was in college and I would always like, before the Marines, I would always like comics. When I was living in Vegas, or I also had another suicide attempt when I was in Vegas.
You did?
Yeah.
What was that? How'd you do it that time?
The same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just depressed.
Drunk?
I wasn't like an alcoholic, but I was just depressed all the time. I mean, I was by myself.
Are you on medication now?
No.
Huh.
No. No, now I'm like the happiest guy in the world.
Huh. It just changed.
Super positive and, you know.
It just happened because you made it.
A lot of reasons. Like I wouldn't have made it unless I was found a way to be happy.
But did you, this was second one, was that during the Marines or after?
It was after I was in the Marines. Huh. Yeah, I remember getting the ambulance bill. And not having money to pay it, I was like, "Ah, fuck, $300."
Why
did
I wake up?
I know, I know. They had like there was a at the Sahara. They had a thing called the Sahara Talent Showcase.
Yeah,
and you could just sign up.
Yeah.
So the first time I ever like there was a talent show in college where I got up and I told jokes,
right?
That I knew.
Yeah,
like bar jokes.
And it went good.
It went okay. I got laughs from friends, and it was not unexpected to me. And then when I was in Vegas, I signed up for the Sahara Talent Showcase, and I did it was terrible.
Yeah.
Awful. Like the worst.
Yeah.
It was just stuff I thought was funny that I wrote down. I didn't know anything about writing jokes or anything. Oh, I don't know what I was doing. People were just staring at me. And then there was a guy that had a local Joe Bihar was his name. He had a local like talent thing that would be at like a Caro's.
Right.
Like literally.
Yeah. No.
In the corner, and it would last for like, it would be like once a week for like 6 weeks. Then he would like, oh, they didn't want us there anymore. Then he would move to Mountain Jack's.
Yeah.
then it would be someplace else similar.
And this was in Vegas?
Yeah, and he would have his, you know, Joe Behar's talent corner or something like your comedy
somewhere,
corner.
Sure.
Joe Behar's comedy corner.
Yeah.
But you could be a talent, you could get up and sing.
Sure.
If you had a little
like
tape.
Like an open mic almost.
A variety, total open mic variety. Every week yeah. in the corner of a Caro's. I remember trying to do stand-up there. Again, still terrible. That's how I met the guy that gave me the ride to L.A.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to do comedy, and there was another guy that was trying to do something, too, and that's how I met those guys.
Oh, okay. When you lost everything.
Open mic level. Yeah. And when I got to Cleveland, this is before the Marine Corps, I moved back and forth all the time, a few times from Vegas. I would go out there and fail and come back to Cleveland, go out and fail and come back to Cleveland.
Sure.
And I got back and the local comedy, local guy was starting a comedy club in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And they were looking, he was going to do it. His idea was to do it with all local talent.
Yeah.
Which is a mistake. So he's looking for people to audition. So I went and I auditioned on a Saturday. I remember we saw an Indians Yankees game. And after the game, I went to audition in the day. And I was awful, I got to say. And this is how bad it was. But he hired me as an MC because he needed people.
Sure.
Like I said, I was just willing to do it. Say the same thing all my life, pretty much. Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay.
Wednesday, the first Wednesday, I had 10 minutes. Then I introduced the middle act and the headliner. Thursday, they cut me to 5 minutes. And on Friday, they said, just introduce the acts.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to do anything.
Right.
Because I was destroying any hope of fun.
Oh, right.
You know, there has to be a sense. I read a book.
You had that vibe.
Huh? I read a book that Freud wrote about humor. There has to be a sense of play for comedy to take place.
Yeah.
Everybody has to be in a playful mood.
Yeah.
And that's why you can't tell certain jokes are like, they call it crossing the line, because you take people out of their playful mood.
Right.
If you make a cancer joke and somebody recently had a cancer
thing,
sure. They won't be playful anymore.
Freud said this? Freud?
Yeah, Freud wrote a book about humor.
Wit and the Unconscious?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Wit and its relation to the unconscious.
Is that what it's called?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. I saw it in college. I didn't read the whole book. I remember, but that part is very true.
Sure.
You know, that's why they have fun music and drinks to get you in a playful mood. And that's why you can talk about cancer. You can joke about rape. You can talk about murder. You can joke around about incest. But everybody has to know you don't mean it, and everybody's in a playful mood about it. And everybody knows nobody's taking it seriously.
You got
to
make all those things fun.
Yeah, and if you're in the room with, you know, 100 people and everybody knows, like, okay, we're all joking around and this guy's sick, so it's all sick humor.
Sure.
I get it. And they're in that mindset.
I get it. Yeah.
It sounds good, but if somebody takes a tape of it and shows it on TV later, look at this fucking guy.
Yeah.
Like, people watching at home are going to go, this guy's a fucking
monster.
Yeah. You know, that happens all the time. People doing, that's the chance you take when you do that kind of joke. Anywho, they cut me and then I tried a couple of times. I was no good, so I stopped. And then later on when I was always, and this was like later on when I'm 28 now, so it's like 8 years later, like 7 years later, something like that, 6 years, 7 years later. You know, I thought, well, that was a thing I tried that I'm no good at.
Yeah.
But I would go to the comedy club all the time to see people. Like when Bob Saget would play, I would see him on Wednesday when the tickets were half price.
Yeah.
Then I would take a date on Friday to see him again.
Oh, really?
And then I'd take another friend of mine on Saturday to see him a third time.
So you were addicted. You love Bob Saget.
I was a comedy.
Yeah.
Aficionado. I would go to that club constantly just as a fan.
Yeah.
And it was somebody like a Richard Jenny or a Bob Saget or somebody who was a really murderer thing where I'd be falling down. I would go back twice a week to see him. Like, I would just really be like, oh, comics. I was like a comedy groupie. And so I would watch these guys. And I remember it's because I saw him already that I kind of like took a lot of information in through osmosis. And I got I was working as a waiter and the owner of the place got mad at me one time. And all of a sudden, I wasn't working good dinner shifts. I was working lunch shifts instead.
Yeah.
And when I did work, I would get the bad section that wasn't enough money.
Right.
And I at the time, I had this friend of mine who was a disc jockey who knew me from back in the day.
Right.
And I was telling him about my troubles. And he goes, well, if you ever think of any jokes for my radio show, I'll pay you.
Was he on a popular radio show?
He was a working disc jockey. Made a living.
Morning show?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes afternoons, whatever.
Yeah.
He said, well, if he ever thinks of any jokes for my radio show, I'll pay it. Because he always thought it was funny from back then. And we always kept in touch.
Yeah.
And I go, how much will you pay me? And he said, I'll give you $10 or $15 a joke.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, shit, I could make $100 a week.
Yeah.
Thinking up jokes.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to think of jokes. Yeah. All I knew was if I thought of something, write it down. So I went to the library in Cleveland and I got a book on how to write jokes.
You did? Well, whose book?
It was called, I think it was called How to Write Jokes by some British guy. I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote it, but it was like the only...
Thank God.
It was the only book in the library about how to write jokes.
Oh my God. And it did all the
things about, you know, making a list about a topic and, you know, exaggerating this and minimizing, you know, like all the standard things you do when you write a joke.
Yeah.
And, but it had all the information and I was like, oh, this is what you do?
Yeah.
It was like a miracle to me. So I started writing jokes and I made, this is like in the fall.
I want that book.
And I made, now I have a bunch of joke writing books. I have like all the.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I bought them all. Gene Pere and all those book guys that work. You don't have any of those joke writing books?
No, any of the books.
Oh my God. They're great.
They are?
Well, you don't have that kind of, you don't have that kind of act anyway.
Well, I'd like to do that kind of act.
Well, then you should get some of these joke writing books.
I will. You got to tell me what they are.
I will.
Okay.
So anyway, January, I made a goal for myself. So I'm going to try these jokes on amateur night.
Yeah.
And see how they do. Because I'm now I know how to write jokes.
Right.
And I went to amateur night that January. And at the time, Stop Making Sense had come out like a year or two before.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, people are wearing like those kind of, like it was like the new wave suit style. Yeah. People wearing those suits.
Yeah.
And the glasses I had were from the Marines.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't afford any other glasses. I wore contact lenses sometimes. Uh-huh. But otherwise, those were the glasses I had because I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
That's the free glasses I got from the Marines. And I had my hair cut short because I was in the Marine Reserves.
Yeah.
And I bought the suit at a sale at the Goodwill, all you can fit in a bag for $20.
Yeah.
And I bought it because, oh, this that was a suit that I had.
Yeah.
I thought it was a hip suit.
Right.
So I wore the suit and I had the glasses and the crew cut and I got up an amateur night and people laughed at me when I walked on stage. And that was my first laugh. And I got $50.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, here we go. And people thought it was funny and they gave me advice and I wrote jokes and everybody, every time I saw a comic I thought was good, I'd say, hey, can you give me some advice? And they would give me more advice and I'd write more jokes.
Who gave you the best advice?
Everybody gave me good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vic Dunlop told me, talk to people like you're talking to them in the living room.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know where to look.
Right.
When I was on stage. What right. Do I do? I can't look at people in the eye. Do I look at the ceiling?
Yeah.
He goes, just look people in the face and pretend you're in the living room. That's what I do.
Yeah.
That was a great tip.
Yeah. And he passed away, didn't he?
Yeah. Somebody else told me a great technique. Tell the joke and then act out the joke.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Tell, set it up?
Like, So here's one of my one I just thought up. If you're not in a relationship, you want to. And I'm in a relationship,
right?
So if you're not in a relationship, you want to feel what it's like to be in a relationship without being in a relationship. Here's what you do: all the fun things you like to do when you're by yourself, stop doing them. That's the joke.
Yeah.
And then you act out the joke.
Right.
Honey, I was just getting high. I was just sorry. I didn't mean to. You do that.
Yeah.
That's.
I get it.
You see people do that.
Examples. A list of examples that you act out.
You see people do that all the time.
Right.
Tell the joke, act out the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Very common.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to happen instinctively, I think.
Yeah, also, tell the joke and don't move. That was another thing I learned.
Oh, yeah?
Tell the joke, and because as soon as you start moving, that's a visual cue for the audience to let them know that another joke's on the way.
Oh, okay.
So the laugh starts to die down.
Oh, okay. So just let it sit.
Like all these like vaudeville fucking tips that people learned in Chicago. There's a lot of Chicago comics coming in that I would like... And I would go to Chicago and do sets too that I would learn from people.
It's great.
I mean, I just picked everybody's brain about every fucking thing and read every book I could find about how to write jokes. And then I just started working and it all blew up from there.
And that's how you built your act and that's how you started?
Yeah. I even came up with a formula about like writing 10 jokes a day to get one joke. That was my percentage. If I had like 10 thoughts,
it's like
10
a monologue
thoughts,
writer's job.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I would try, but I wasn't like Seinfeld where I had to think, oh, I have to write 8 hours a day because that's my job.
Right.
I figured out in my head that if I think of one funny joke a day, telling it, getting the punchline, getting the laugh, that's X number of seconds. That's like 20 seconds, 25 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'll also think of tags for it when I act it out and tag it. That'll be another 5 or 10 seconds, including the laugh.
Right.
And if I wrote one joke a day, 5 days a week, all year round, I could get about 45 minutes a year of material.
Oh, so you had it all worked out.
I worked it out.
Yeah.
Like and a math problem.
Did you follow that system?
Yes.
That's great.
And I would write
like writing 10 jokes a day, though, you could be anywhere. You could be in your car. You could be like whatever, wherever the brains work.
And then the kicker of it was
they
didn't have to be 10 good jokes. I just needed one good joke.
Right.
So it would be like 9 thoughts.
Yeah.
And then one good joke.
Right.
And then I could tag it and work on it and that would be turned into something. And that's all I did.
That's and
the rules were they couldn't be dirty.
Yeah.
I could write dirty jokes.
Right.
But they couldn't count towards the 10.
Okay.
So we were extra.
Yeah.
They had to be stuff that I'd be clean enough to do on the Tonight Show.
Right. And then you got to do the Tonight Show with Carson.
Yeah. And they couldn't be topical because I wanted to be evergreen. I could write topical jokes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that Carter.
Right.
Or, oh,
yeah.
Oh, that Clinton.
Right.
Oh, that whoever's the politician.
Right.
But they didn't count towards the 10.
But you did your first Tonight Show with Johnny, right?
Yeah. Johnny and Doc.
That's great.
And Ed. Yeah. That was my dream. I had to have all the...
And you did it.
I wanted to have all the starters there.
Yeah.
Nothing against Tommy Newsom.
What do you mean? You want the first
I love Tommy Newsom.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't want a guest star. I love Gary Shandling, but I didn't want him to be the guest star.
Right.
When I was doing my first Tonight Show.
Yeah, of course.
Had to be Carson.
So you obviously came up, you got your headlining set, and then you got your show.
Yeah.
And then my question was really, is that, you know, you said you did retire to some degree.
Yeah.
And then they made, was the Price is Right an offer you couldn't refuse, or something you really thought was?
Well, I did that Power of 10 show.
Right. And you liked hosting?
When I did, it was an interesting show to me.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, wow, what an interesting thing.
The polling show. Yeah.
Yeah. You get polling and it's like, that sounds like fun. And, you know, I go to New York.
Yeah.
You know, for a couple weekends a month, big deal.
Yeah.
You know, all of my other time.
Oh, you knock them out that you strip them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All my other time is free.
Sure.
Fucking why not?
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
So, and I liked Michael Davies and the guy that was doing it. So fuck yeah.
And you did it.
Yeah. And then I did the pilot and then it was for CBS.
Yeah.
And then I was driving on a driving trip out of New York, then in a rental car, and I got a call from CBS. How'd you like to do my agent called me.
Yeah.
So I got a really interesting call from CBS casting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had been taking acting lessons because I thought maybe I'll do some movies or something, small parts. And I thought maybe I'd do a little small part here and there. And I thought, oh, did they want me for a CSI? I really did like, I can act. And he goes, how would you like to take over from Bob Barker and do The Price is Right? And I was like, I think I said, what? Fuck no. I think that's the first thing I said.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that old man show, I'm going to do that fucking show. I didn't know anything about Price is Right or what it was.
Yeah. But you knew it was a part of the, an integrated part of American culture.
Yeah. But I thought, I'm not going to be like, they might as well ask me if I want to do a cruise ship. That's what I felt like.
Right. That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah. And then they said, here's the number they're throwing around.
No, not even then. Then they picked up Power 10. And I'm back. I was at Bob's Big Boy. Now I'm back. Now they picked up the show.
The one in like Burbank over there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm eating there. I used to go there all the time. Yeah. And then my agent calls again and he goes, hey, CBS called again.
Uh-huh.
And I go, really? And they go, they still want you to do The Price is Right. And I was like, well, what does it pay?
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know. And I go, what are the hours? Because I'm doing this other show.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know. And I go, well, I at least owe him a meeting now.
Right. Because
I got this. Now
you're on the air.
Now they're my family.
Yeah.
I have to take a meeting.
Right.
So they go, find out what you can. I'll find out what I can.
Uh-huh.
They had no website. They had no anything. I found out as much as I could. I had a meeting with him. By the end of the meeting, I wanted to do the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? What was it that about it?
Well, I still didn't know exactly how much it paid or what the hours were, but they filled me in when I took the meeting.
Right.
And it was like the head of CBS daytime and one of the producers and president of CBS and one of the producers on The Price is Right. They were getting to know me and I was asking questions like, does the show ever travel? Like, what are they? And they go, oh, we'll work around your schedule. If you need time off, don't worry about it.
Uh-huh.
Ask us in far in advance. We get the time off, which is true. Finally, the one guy, Sid Vintage is his name. He was sipping a beer and he looked at me, he goes, what's the thing you like to do most in life? And I go, I love leaving big tips. I really do get a thrill out of like throwing $100 at people.
Yeah.
Like a valet or a cup of coffee.
That's what you told him?
When I used to drink coffee, I would like just leave $100 for everything.
Yeah.
And I've had on road trips, I've had people chase me out of the restaurant, like at a Denny's.
Yeah.
Sir, you left too much. I go, nah. They don't recognize me. I go, nah, keep it.
Yeah.
What? Like people, I love it.
Yeah.
I love over tipping. And, I go, I love leaving big tips. And he looks at me and he goes, well, if you do The Price is Right, you can do that every day for a living. And I was like, wow, that's right. And that's what sold me.
The feeling.
Of like,
that feeling.
Of like,
changing someone's life.
Have
with
a
it.
Car.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it, bro.
Oh, my God.
You.
That's true.
There's nothing like it. And it's not my money.
Yeah.
That's the best part. It's somebody else's money and I get all the credit.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
I just love it. I love people like are freaking out because they get the like
a free thing?
Because I know how I know how broke I was.
Right.
Like I gave plasma when I lived in Vegas. I lived in this Roach Motel.
Right.
So when people even win like $500, which is not a lot on The Price is Right, but I'm like $500 is great.
Yeah.
My joke is like, if you won $500 on a scratcher, you wouldn't shut up about it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah. Wow, that's great. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, well, great. And you're doing it forever? Are you there for life, or how does it work?
I don't have any reason to leave.
And does it do well? Does it hold its numbers and everything?
It's the number one show in daytime. Second half hour, we get like 6 million people watching.
That's unbelievable.
If it was on prime time with those numbers, we'd be like a top 25 show.
That's crazy. And what about this? And you're not depressed, and you found a way to be happy. You enjoy sports. I know my friend Dave Anthony sometimes travels with
Dave
you.
Anthony.
The soccer games and whatnot. Yeah, and when did Buddhism come into play?
I started practicing and learning about it like right around when the Drew Carey show ended. Right around there.
Uh-huh.
And then I really came home when I was, I took the Vipassana meditation course where you go for 10 days without talking.
Oh, yeah?
I did that.
Wow.
A couple of years ago.
And that did it?
That was a life changer.
Yeah,
because every night you do you get a lesson in Buddhist philosophy along with the meditation.
Uh-huh.
And then you meditate the whole rest of the day. You get up at 4 a.m. and you meditate all day. And then around 8:30, there's a 45-minute lesson in Buddhist philosophy.
Interesting.
No talking.
And that's, and I guess the combination of that and you know, making a living and having, you know, validated yourself in so many different ways, you know, kind of pushed back that shitty sense of self and all the depression.
Yeah.
Because you don't feel like you were biologically depressed. It was conditional in some way.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Well, when you're, the place you grow up in is like a punchline.
Right, and you know, the situation you grew up with your dad missing.
And everybody,
you know,
from that era of Cleveland that grew up has a really self-depreciating sense of humor. Or
it wasn't just the home life. It was just like, yes, Cleveland.
Everybody in the town was like, oh, hey, we suck kind of a sense of humor. You know, like that whole, even like the local disc jockeys, the local TV people, everybody had this
shitty,
of course it sucks. Yeah. We're doing it.
Yeah. Low self-esteem, the entire
city. And Mad Magazine was really popular. How Mad Magazine goes, here's some other bullshit we thought of. That's their whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, here's some more garbage from Mad Magazine.
That
was the whole point of view of the whole city, when they would go, yeah, we're doing this thing. Of course, it's got to suck because we're doing it.
Oh, man.
Of course I suck because I'm from here. They would always have that kind of sense of humor about us.
Sure. Sure. Right.
You know?
Well, I'm glad everything worked out, man. It's great talking to you.
Yeah. Our shit doesn't stink. And our shit stinks in Cleveland.
Yeah.
That's the, you know?
Yeah,
we have the opposite attitude of hoity-toity.
Yeah. Yeah. But I tell you, it's what that, like, there's a couple restaurants in Cleveland, the best restaurants in the world.
Yeah,
that Greenhouse Tavern and Michael Simon's place down the street.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, and then there's a grilled cheese restaurant. Do you ever go to that corned beef place?
No, I don't like corned beef.
Swyman's?
I don't like corned beef.
Oh.
Which is weird because it's a big, huge thing. There was a really famous corned beef place right in my neighborhood that you could walk to. But
it wasn't Swyman's?
No, it was something else. It was like a local place that had been there forever.
We can have different opinions about corned beef. It was great talking to you, man.
Nice talking to you.
Nice seeing you again.
That was fun.
That's great.
Cut it down to 25 minutes.
Yeah. We're looking for 12. Did I tell you that? I don't know if you understood what we were doing.
I hated to be impolite. I didn't want to cut you.
I don't know what you thought you were coming for, but I hope you feel better.
Yeah, I should pay you $150 an hour.
Oh, boy. That was such a satisfying hit for me. Drew Carey was amazing. That was amazing. I really enjoyed talking to him. Hope you did. Hope you liked that, too. And soon I will be playing guitar in here. We're not far away from that. Just hang. I know there are a lot of you who are like, when? When? When, Mark, when do we get you working out riffs at the end of your broadcast? When does that happen again? Soon, folks. Soon. That's all I'm going to say. I got to get the guitars out. I just got my sound panels up. Did I tell you about my sound panels? Boomer lives!